Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. I'm Dr. Marty Gentius of Kent State University, and this week on Counselor Audio Source, Dr. Larry Lesh speaks with Dr. Jill Geltner, both of the University of Florida, about the school counselor and accountability.
I'm here today with Dr. Larry Lesh from the University of Florida, and we're going to be discussing the school counselor and accountability. Dr. Lesh, rather than me go on and on introducing you, why don't you share what you want to share about who you are and where you've been and where you're going, I guess?
Well, I graduated with my doctorate degree from Kent State University in 1973, and I've been employed here ever since, so that's about 34 years.
Okay.
I had some experience as a school counselor, and that has been my focus area, my program assignment for the entire time that I've been here.
Hmm.
Most of my work has been in the area of measurement and evaluation, so I've tried to combine those at different times in my career.
Okay, very good. Wonderful. So you went from Kent State to the University of Florida and have been here all that time.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen very much these days anymore,
does it?
No,
it doesn't.
Okay.
It's a relatively rare career.
Okay, well, wonderful. Basically, today we're going to focus on, you've done many, many things in your career, but we're going to focus on the school counselor and the accountable school counselor, which is the title of your most recent book, written with Martin Ritchie. And I'm just going to basically go sort of from the beginning through different things that are mentioned in the book.
Okay.
But just in general, to begin, in the book, you state that school counselors are vulnerable today. And can you explain maybe how you think they're vulnerable or what you mean by that?
Well, in terms of vulnerability, Martin and I have used that phrase to mean that counselors are could be among the first people to be removed or cut or, mm-hmm. or whatever the phrase is. Eliminated from school systems, with the emphasis today on relatively standardized curricula and the school accountability on the basis of test scores. There's so much focus on specific classroom activities and a tremendous proportion of the resources being focused on those efforts to enhance schools' test performance that counselors are kind of out there. They're student services personnel that, in a sense, are expendable.
Hmm. Okay. Similar to what's happening with art and music and PE.
Yeah, all the elective courses and those kinds of things that extracurricular activities for students, things that seem to be falling by the wayside as all the resources are dedicated to the enhancing test performance.
Right, right. Things that can be tested.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Similarly, in the book, it also talks about how not being accountable over the years has sort of caught up with school counselors, that not focusing on showing how they're meaningful mm-hmm. has caught up with them. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I'm sure they've been talking about it forever. I'm certainly aware that over the last 40 years or so, back when I was a school counselor, they were talking about the fact that counselors are expendable. And mm-hmm. so they've tried, counselor educators and others have tried to emphasize that over the years. And there's always been a lot of lip service given to being, you know, you need to justify your position, you need to support your role in the schools and so forth. And quite frankly, I haven't seen much change over the years.
Mm.
So it's not only a current phenomenon, it's an historic phenomenon. Now, in one sense, it would be easy to say, well, you know, if they've been saying it for that long, why is anybody worrying about it? Well, I think things have changed. I think the tremendous emphasis on academic performance vis-a-vis test performance in schools and what I see is a really radical shift in fund allocations in schools, mm-hmm. with all the money being put on enhancing students' test performance. That's different. Prior to that time, schools, prior to the last 5 or 10 years, school systems, and in particular individual schools, had a fair amount of control over how they expended the funds that were given to them. In a sense, they still have that control, but with principals, everybody else, superintendents, everybody else being held accountable in terms of test scores, obviously that's where the resources are going.
Mm. So you really do see even more of a shift in the last 10 years than in the 20 years before that.
In the 40 years before that, yeah, yeah, really, I really do. I see a lot of that kind of emphasis. No Child Left Behind has changed some of the emphases.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's certainly the purpose of American schools is to educate children, and it's very difficult to argue with that. But professionals like school counselors, school psychologists, nurses, social workers, etc., that play a supplementary role to that academic mission are now being viewed as just that, supplementary. And if they're supplementary, maybe we don't need them.
Use that money for teaching reading,
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
Right.
Okay. So we're making a good argument here of why it's important to be accountable, to argue that you have a purpose and worth. How would you define accountability? Or in general terms, what does an accountable school counselor look like?
Well, basically, I follow the line of reasoning of the Ask a National model. And basically, the Ask a National model says the function of school counseling programs is to support the academic mission of the schools.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a problem, there has been a problem, however, in terms of how school counselors either have been or even now are interpreting that phrase.
Mm.
They tend to think, well, that means that school counselors have to improve students' grades. And I think that's a trap. I think school counselors have to fight that tendency. If, in fact, school counselors could demonstrate that they improve students' grades, then they would be held accountable for improving students' grades, which is not what we want to be held accountable for.
Right.
So what we can be accountable for, in my opinion, is helping children behave in ways that are likely to result in good academic performance.
Mm.
So, okay. For example, rather than a school counselor trying to do activities that will directly enhance students' grades or holding out grade improvement as the criterion, I think we need to look at the things that school counselors can influence. For example, obviously a child's going to do better in school if the child is in school.
Okay.
Counselors can help children have better attendance records. If a child is attentive and not misbehaving in class, the child is likely to be a better student. Counselors can help that.
Mm-hmm.
If the child has poor study habits, counselors can help that. If the child has a family situation that's interfering with the child's ability to do well in school, maybe counselors can help that. School counselors can help that.
Okay.
So there are things that school counselors can do that will enhance the child's opportunity to be a good student. And in my opinion, that's what school counselors should be accountable for.
Mm.
So to answer your question more directly, it's to me, an accountable school counselor is one who is accountable for the kinds of things that we have been advocating for years. Better peer relationships, better study habits, better interpersonal relationships in schools, better relationships with teachers, better family situations. All those kinds of things are the kinds of things that I think school counselors can be accountable for and should be accountable for. So the point is, I don't think they should be accountable for grade improvement directly. They should be accountable for improving those kinds of behaviors that are likely to lead to better academic performance.
So basically, by addressing these, whatever the specific issue might be with that child, which would mm-hmm. be a big thing mm-hmm. for the school counselor to determine what that might be, and hopefully by that enhancing the chances that their
right.
grades will be better.
Yeah. If a child is depressed or unhappy, the child is not going to do well in school. I mean, it's not only logical, it's evident to most people.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the kinds of things to which school counselors should attend.
Okay. It makes perfect sense. Okay. You mentioned the Ask a National model.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also reading in your book about the Transforming School Counseling Initiative, that they sort of have changed the role or the responsibility of school counselors and their relationship with data. You did mention that through the national model, sort of were being told to be more accountable, or that's sort of what the American School Counselor Association has laid out. How do you see that relationship developing over time now that it's not that it's being hoisted on us, but it's being said, this is important, you must do it?
Well, I think it's created a somewhat narrower focus. Historically, rather flat statements were made. School counselors should be accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Now the statements in both of those models, if you will, are saying they should be accountable through the presentation of data.
Mm.
And that is certainly a narrower perspective. In a sense, but just in a sense, it takes out the rather glowing anecdotal reports that school counselors sometimes get.
Mm.
It takes away the informal opinion, if you will, and it says, in effect, you have to have data. So in that sense, it's narrower. The problem at this point is, in my view, is that the word data has not been defined.
Yes.
Within those models. So there's both freedom and also some confusion that exists by the use of the word data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, ironically, of course, is one of my next questions, is that the title of Chapter 2 is Accountable for What, to Whom, and How? And mm-hmm. sort of like, how do we go about doing this? So let's start off with the what, and what is the data? And I guess maybe the most productive way to explain that is maybe through an example of the data school counselor might collect in a who's working in a school who decides he or she wants to start trying to do this.
Okay. I think what we recommend is the first thing that a school counselor do is identify the things that they are doing.
Okay.
Both those things that they quote unquote should be doing as per the Ask a National model, and those things that they're doing but they don't think they should be doing, and so forth.
So don't add anything new yet. Just look at what you're already
doing.
No,
don't add anything new.
Okay.
Personally, I'm of the opinion that you shouldn't pay a whole lot of attention to the things that you don't think you should be doing, or at least professional standards would suggest you not be doing, because if you prove that you're good at them, you're going to keep doing them.
Yeah.
So we don't want to do that. So what we advocate is that you look at the things that you're doing, and in particular, those things that you like and or should be doing as a school counselor. And once you identify what they are, then you have to think very carefully about what it is that you actually do, as well as what it is that you want to actually happen. And then from there, you figure out what types of data might be appropriate. Data, in our interpretation, includes numbers, which is the obvious example. But it also might include words. It might include certain kinds of opinions. It might include products. It might include activities that one can take credit for. Could be a lot of things. Data can be about anything, depending on how you frame it. So it's not just numbers.
So I'm thinking about, for example, if a school counselor was doing a developmental guidance unit in fourth grade, and at the end of a six-week unit, the fourth graders were to illustrate with a picture or cartoon or something about how they might handle a conflict situation that was prescribed by the counselor. Could the counselor then simply take those drawings and creations and create a bulletin board to show what had been done?
Okay. Or a notebook, or a website, or lots of different ways.
Okay.
In regard to classroom classroom guidance activities. Basically, at its most fundamental level, it's an educational activity, at least in my view. What that means to me is that as a result of the class participation in classroom guidance unit, the student either needs to know something different or to have developed different skills. Mm-hmm. And different skills often includes activity. So, for example, if I'm talking about classroom management, to pick up on your example, as a school counselor, I may present two or three different ways to resolve some kind of conflict mm-hmm. with peers or whomever. Well, I can give a very simple little quiz or questionnaire at the end or give a scenario and says this situation is occurring. How would the student resolve the situation? I can, in effect, make a little mini test. Mm-hmm. And if I want, I can even do that in a pre and post format, which is very, very simple idea. We're not talking about sophisticated measurement and so forth.
It's and maybe
simple.
Just a few simple questions.
Just a few simple questions. Because the amount of learning, if you will, in terms of content knowledge is going to be relatively small, but that's okay. They're supposed to learn something. If it's a skill set, You can do some of the same kinds of things. You might have role playing, videotape that. You might have ask questions about what skills a particular child would use, so forth and so on. Hmm. One of my favorites in that regard is that, not in the particular example you chose, but in many classroom guidance activities, there is what I call a prompt to action. And a prompt to action means that the classroom guidance activity is intended to get children to do something.
Okay.
Maybe go to a library, maybe to hold a conversation with a child with whom they have not held a conversation before, maybe to report bullying activity or something.
Mm-hmm.
So what you can do is, in that scenario, is to ask the children to sign a commitment to do something. We know, for example, that even at very, very young ages, if children sign their name to something and make a commitment to do something, there's a very high probability they will. So, for example, if I ask children to go to a library and look at look up some information about a particular job that they might want,
okay.
I would have them sign a statement that says if the activity is, Monday afternoon, I would say something like, I would give them the statement that says, by Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock, I will have visited the library and looked up one book on such and such a job, and have them sign it. At the end of that, I collect them and I say, of the 25 kids that were in class, 22 signed a statement that they intended to.
Wow.
That's a very, very powerful indicator that children are prompted to action.
Not necessarily did they go to the library, but do they agree that they will go to the library?
And then I come back in a week and ask them if they went,
ah,
which is the other part of it.
Okay, so say we find out 22 signed that they will go and 18 actually go or mm-hmm. whatever, or 22
right.
maybe to support your our hopes. That
probably not, but that's okay.
You're right. What do we do with those results?
Well, you present them to whomever one might be responsible. The common word for that is stakeholders.
Okay.
And there are lots of different types of stakeholders. Probably the most immediate stakeholder for most school counselors is the building principal, because the building principal, in effect, oversees the school counselor's job. Although in larger systems, there might be a director of guidance as an intermediary mm-hmm. or something. Teachers can be stakeholders, parents, community members, some cases funding organizations, mm-hmm. The students themselves, other professional school counselors, and also oneself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you figure out who are the stakeholders that are likely to be, I hate to use this word, but impressed or so forth by the information you're presenting to them. Teachers, for example, I know a lot of school counselors have trouble getting into classrooms just to do their classroom guidance activities because the teachers don't want to give up the time because there's so much pressure on them for the test performance.
Of course.
So if I'm a school counselor, I want to share with teachers results that show that the students did something that reasonable people would say is good behavior for children to engage in.
Mm. Okay. So you could use it sort of to toot your own horn.
Oh, of course. That's what it's all about.
And find out who the audience is who would hear that toot the loudest, in other
yeah.
words.
Yeah. And there's probably multiple audiences. If I did a classroom guidance activity where, suppose I was doing a study skills thing, and I had children map out a plan for when they were going to study. I'd collect the plans that they made, and I'd give them to the teachers, and I'd give them to the principal, and I'd probably give them to their parents.
Okay.
So this is what the child is doing.
Well, in the example that you use about going to look up at a career at the library, mm-hmm. you would think by the time the child had done that, the parents had already heard about what you had encouraged them to do. So the children may then still be helping you, you know, advertise
might, yeah.
what you're...
I don't think as much of that goes on as we would like. That's kind of based on the assumption of good communication between parents and children, which is certainly true for some children. But there again, I think, in a more serious note, I think that one of the mistakes that we make is that we assume that people are aware of the good stuff that we
mm-hmm.
do, and they aren't. That's the focus of our and the message in our book, that people are not aware, and that just touting our own horns and saying we do good things isn't enough.
Need to be specific.
Need to be specific. Need to show behavior change, and we need to put it in front of them. It's basic marketing.
Okay, well that makes sense. It's about time we got started, I guess. Huh? Okay.
Some have. There are some that are doing those kind of things.
Sure. But we need to be doing more of it mm-hmm. and more across the board.
Sure.
We talked about the who, which is the stakeholders. The how piece of this, accountable for what, to whom, and how, and we're saying we want to show the data to the stakeholders. And the how, you had mentioned web pages or notebooks or mm-hmm. things like that. I guess maybe what would be a starting point? Does it depend on where you are or?
Well, I think it goes back to which stakeholders, because I firmly believe that the nature of the presentation has to be geared to the stakeholders.
Okay.
If I'm going to do something and write an article for professional publication, it's certainly going to have a different set of standards and format and acceptance criteria, if you will, than if I'm making a 5-minute presentation at a school board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I'm casually talking with teachers in a lounge, or whether I'm trying to share something with the principal, or students, or whatever. So I think you have to gear the nature of the results, the reporting of the results, to the particular audiences. It isn't one size fits all.
Mm-hmm.
You do different things for different people. School boards don't want to see a lot of flashy statistical analyses.
Oh.
Parents don't want to read things that they don't understand and have to contend with a lot of counseling lingo that they've never mm-hmm. heard before. Principals want to know very specifically how children behave, and in particular, how many children were affected. Those kinds of things. So they have different needs and perspectives, and we have to adopt what we do to their individual situations.
Okay, very good. So really think about who it is that you're trying to target and make your information friendly to that group.
Yeah, it's basic communication. It's just a consideration that we just tend not to think about.
So if you're thinking about starting the how piece, mm-hmm. Is it best for a school counselor to sort of think about where she might be comfortable, whether or not she can do a web page or send a note home, a written communication to a parent? Or is there a best method that is sort of best bang for your buck?
No, I think you start with what you're comfortable with. and then expand beyond that. If you start with something that with which you're not comfortable, then likelihood is you're going to turn yourself off and you stop doing it. So you stay within your comfort zone, to use a nice counseling phrase, and you do those kinds of things for a while. If you are, for example, comfortable writing and describing things, then that's what you do. If you're comfortable talking, then you talk first. If you're comfortable creating web pages, then that's what you do first. So we advocate that you stay well within your comfort zone, at least initially, and then broaden out from that. We think that eventually people can get to a lot of different formats, a lot of different kinds of activities, but you start with that which works. And the same thing is true in terms of how much of this stuff should I do. You start with one or two activities, and you work that out and see how that works. Then you go on to others and so forth. Because once you get a sense of it, then hopefully it will become ingrained as part of the activity. So that as a practicing school counselor, you would say to yourself, well, I'm going to do this activity. How can I build in the accountability component right along with it?
Well, and I imagine as a school counselor, if you're getting feedback that what you're doing is meaningful to your clientele, then that really could be motivating over time for you to continue doing it.
Well, we certainly hope so. Either that or the entire premise of the book is flawed.
I think the professional component in this, that you're being accountable to yourself, is also could be... not only are you holding yourself accountable, but you really are rewarding yourself by seeing that you're making a difference in what you're doing with the kids.
Yeah, and we thought that was an important point to emphasize, that the burnout is a problem among school counselors, just like it is among professionals in general. Mm-hmm. And part of it is that not only do we ask everybody else to do what we do on faith, but we ask ourselves to do that. So we never really bother to determine any evidence to any great extent of, am I actually doing good things? Am I actually doing things that make the kinds of differences I want to be made? I think we do that with the best of intentions, and we want to believe that we are,
right. But
we don't evaluate it to any great extent. And one of the problems with that is that we wind up doing things, a lot of things, that we're really not very good at, we're not very successful at, and after a while, something in our mind clicks and we figure that out, and then it's like, boy, I've wasted a lot of time, and I don't want to do this anymore,
right.
And those kinds of things.
Not the direction we want to go in.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The other bonus I was thinking, as you were describing, not only are you feeding your own motivation, but if others in the school or parents or administrators suddenly see these results and feel that they can't live without you, what a nice feeling for people to appreciate and respect what you do all of a sudden.
That's exactly it. You have to, the phrase we use, you have to build a case that for what you do, how you do it, and so forth. To the extent that you can prove that you are valuable, your stock, so to speak, in the school environment, goes up, and that's a good thing. That's takes away the vulnerability. That's the purpose.
So kids are getting the services. We're feeling good about what we're doing, and the other stakeholders are appreciating what we do.
Yep.
That certainly sounds wonderful.
And above all, and another thing in that regard is, very, very few professionals are doing this. The teachers have a built-in accountability in this day and age, because they get held accountable for the test scores.
Right.
I think that's unfortunate in a general sense, but that's it for them. I mean, that's thrust upon them. Very, very few other people, other student services people in the schools, are doing any kind of accountability activities. Now, some of them have jobs that are quite literally mandated by law. If you have school psychologists, for example, there are certain types of evaluations of student characteristics that have to be made, and they are the people who are qualified to do them, and therefore, in a sense, those jobs are guaranteed. What's not guaranteed, however, is how many of them are there in the school system. And the same thing is true of school counselors.
Right.
So one of the potential benefit, an additional potential benefit of being accountable is that there is at least the potential to build a case that more school counselors should be hired in a school.
Wow. Expand our role as opposed to possibly having it narrowed.
Right.
Okay. A question just came up in my mind while we were talking. How is what you're talking about different than simply counting how many kids come to see you per month, or how many consultations you do with a teacher, or how many parent phone calls you get? How is sort of, you know, the doing the tallying different than the kind of measuring you're talking about? Because that certainly shows that school counselors have something to do.
Tallying shows that you live through the week.
Mm.
That's it. I'm really opposed to that. I'm really opposed to calendars. I just hate school counselor accountability through calendars. All a calendar shows is that you filled up the time.
Right.
The fundamental question is, how is a child behaving when I encountered them, and how are they behaving after I encountered them? Somewhere you have to be able to show behavior change. Okay. A child may. That's why, for example, a lot of counseling activities, we ask children, "Oh, did you like participating in the group activity?" "Oh, yeah, that was a lot of fun." "Are you doing anything different?" "No." We send them back to class. They're still disruptive. They're still alienated. Whatever. Nothing has changed. So, tallying, calendars, that kind of stuff, in my opinion, is fairly useless data.
Hmm.
Because, for example, by analogy, a teacher could say, "Well, I taught the kids all year." Well,
right.
The question is, did their test scores go up?
Right. I see what you're
That's
saying.
The
it's taken
line.
To the next step.
Uh-huh.
In the book, there's a really powerful statement, and it was, how are the students different as a result of your school counseling program?
That's it. That's fundamental.
Okay, so it's not how many phone calls you took, because you may have said nothing meaningful.
That's right.
Although I'm sure that's not the case.
No, and I don't mean to downplay that the counselors are busy. I mean, obviously, everybody knows that they are, and
sure.
I certainly agree with that. But that's not, to me, that's not being accountable. That's like saying... and I showed up for all my classes every semester, and the students were there too.
Mm.
Maybe they learned something, maybe they didn't.
Right.
And the real question is, did they learn anything?
What was your impact?
Yeah.
What was your impact?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I'm really, really enthusiastic. I'm listening to this podcast. I'm jumping out of my chair with excitement. I can't wait to start. What should I do first?
Figure out the thing you like to do most. Figure out what you like to do as a counselor. Figure out the thing that in most cases, that's the thing at which you perceive yourself to be good at.
Okay.
Okay. And it may be classroom guidance. It may be individual counseling, group counseling. I don't know, whatever it is. They figure out what it is, and then comes the hard question. How are children supposed to be different as a result of my doing whatever it is that I do?
Hmm.
And again, in general, either they're supposed to know something different or they're supposed to be able to do something different, and often it's a combination of those two. So I've long been what I refer to as a behavior-centered counselor, or I have a behavior-centered orientation. That's not to be confused with a behaviorist. It means that, to me, the focus is on how people act differently. What do they do that's different? Because you can see behavior change, and
sure.
Everybody can see it.
Well, and I would assume that if you think someone's thinking differently or feeling differently, they would then also behave differently.
Yeah, but I think that's not necessarily a valid assumption. That's part of what I'm saying.
Mm.
We ask kids how they feel about the activities we do, but it doesn't necessarily lead to behavior change. If I have a child in an elementary school classroom that I do observations in the classroom, and the child is out of seat without permission, an average of three times an hour, then if I do something with a child and after that the average is one time an hour or one and a half times an hour, whatever, then I can show that I've made a change. Is it an absolute change? No, but it's an improvement.
Yes.
Now, if I ask the kid, how did you feel about meeting with me? He or she is probably going to say, oh, it was fun. And then they're going to smile, and then they're going to go back to class, and they're still going to average three times a week of being, three times an hour of being out of their seat without permission.
So it's, again, how is the student different having interacted with you, yeah. And what specifically can you say
right.
to show that you had an impact there?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's really came from a very fundamental observation that I had long time ago, and unfortunately it took me years to realize it. When people seek counseling, invariably they say, I have this problem, I have that problem, I have this other problem, and they conclude by saying, and I don't know what to do.
Hmm.
They don't say, I don't know how to feel. They don't say, I don't know how to think. They say, I don't know what to do.
Actions, yeah.
Teachers do this. This kid is driving me crazy, and I don't know what to do. Okay. Students do that. I'm having such and such problem, and I don't know what to do. So it's all about behavior. It's all about changing behavior. And,
wow.
And certainly changing feelings is maybe a part of that or an enabler, if you will. Changing the way a child thinks or what a child knows may enable that behavior change. But at least my co-author and I, it's all about behavior. If the child or children are not behaving different as a result of what we did, we didn't have any impact. And that difference ought to be discernible.
Okay. Well, it sounds like also it's the thing that other people want to see.
Yeah,
to
and
prove
that's
that you're
and that's the point. They can see it. Sometimes the changes are very, very small. If for example, a teacher notices that a child is seemingly distressed or depressed or whatever, and I'm as a counselor, if I can enable a child to be a little bit happier, for lack of a better term. And the child smiles more frequently, that teacher's going to notice that. The child may not say any more, they may not do any better in class, whatever, but at least the teacher will know that the child is quote-unquote happier, and therefore the teacher can devote his or her attention to something else.
Hmm. Okay.
It's always about behavior.
And there could be a ripple effect,
uh-huh.
too. Okay.
Certainly.
How, in your opinion, how might this be different depending on the level a school counselor, if you're an elementary counselor, middle or high school?
I don't think it is.
Okay.
I really don't. I think it's always about behavior. If I'm helping a high school student explore college opportunities, and I suggest that or work with the student to have him or her do some kind of explorations, well, they either did or they didn't. If I suggest that they, go to the library or use one of the computer programs or visits or whatever, they either did or they didn't, and I can count how many times they did it. If it's an elementary school student, same thing. You look at the behaviors. How are they behaving before? How are they behaving after? Only did it change? And there ought to be some noticeable change.
Different for what you might be doing, but the
uh-huh.
same across the board.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you're a counselor educator, perhaps, and you have people in practicum or internship mm-hmm. programs in the public schools as part of the education program for the master's degree or the doctorate degree,
mm-hmm.
How might a counselor educator talk to these students, or how might these students handle themselves if they're not seeing this where they are? If they go to work with a school counselor and that school counselor doesn't believe in accountability or says they don't have time,
mm-hmm.
how can we encourage that even if it's not certainly even in a school there may be one school counselor that buys into this idea and thinks it's important and another school counselor who kind of poo-poos it. How can we sort of take that old school with the new school idea and not have the newer people be affected or allow them to try to do it?
Well, for me, it's easy. I just require it.
Ah. Okay.
I mean, as a university supervisor, I say you have to do something that demonstrates to me that you've made a difference in one or more children's lives.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't mean that they have to, let me clarify, it doesn't mean that they have to start a conflict with their host or that they have to do things. But, again, the ideas that we're talking about are relatively simplistic. Certainly wouldn't advocate anything that's going to be offensive to anyone. So adding a questionnaire or doing a behavioral observation or using a rating scale or whatever should be a legitimate part of the process, can be a legitimate part of the process without being an affront or an imposition or whatever to the host counselor. And that's literally the point of what we're talking about in the whole thing, that accountability is should be built into quote-unquote regular functioning rather than being an add-on, rather than being a highly extraneous activity or something that you do because
special occasion
or whatever. It ought to be a part of one's normal activity. And so you can take whatever activities the host counselor is having the practicum or internship student do, and then you add an accountability component to it. So you're not going to annoy the host counselor by telling the student that they have to do something the host isn't going to like.
Okay.
You say, no, we'll do whatever they want done, but then we'll add in an accountability component.
Okay, so it's necessarily part of the training,
yeah.
And we can add it to whatever whatever the host counselor thinks is important.
Yeah.
And then I guess springing off that would be the idea that then that school counselor in training gets positive feedback, uh-huh. likes feeling like an impact is uh-huh. being made, and then continues to do that.
Yeah. The qualifier would be that I say the feedback doesn't have to be positive.
Oh, good point.
Feedback is feedback. If one of the things that we don't do in our profession, unfortunately, and no other profession does this to any great extent either, but one of the things that we don't do in our profession is advertise the things that don't work. And as a consequence of that, we continue to do the same things over and over again
okay.
because we have this fallacious belief that they're effective. Well, if I do something and I find out that it's not effective, then I have just as much information as if I found out that it was working the way I thought it was.
Better use of your time again.
If I find out it's not working, do something else. That's
okay.
the bottom line. If it doesn't work, you do something else. You do something different or you do something else. So
you're getting the information.
So the feedback, it's the feedback that's important. It's the data, if you will, not the nature of the data.
Which is an important point, that just because mm-hmm. it doesn't say what you're doing is fantastic or
right.
effective
right.
doesn't mean that you haven't gained information that will help shape the program or
yeah.
improve what you do.
If I've got a particular strategy, if you will, for advising students, and I find out that it's not helping the children make advisement decisions effectively, then certainly the implication is I ought to do something else.
Sure.
Well, that's good information.
That in many ways could be more important
uh-huh.
information than if you're doing something okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Couple more questions.
Sure.
In the book, you do talk about program evaluation.
Uh-huh.
And I think that phrase is thrown around quite a bit, and I'm not sure if people really know what that means or why that's important. Overall program evaluation.
Program evaluation, at least in my opinion, is getting at what's the big things that we do as school counselors, and it's difficult to define because most of the activities we do as school counselors are relatively singular. They're relatively mm-hmm. individualized, or with small groups of people or whatever. But program evaluation means that. Program, if you will, the counseling program, provide the services that it was supposed to provide in ways that influenced children's lives? In other words, made them behave differently.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you take the academic, social, and personal academic, personal, social, and career functions in the Ask a National model, theoretically there ought to be activities in each of those areas, and there ought to be some summary, if you will, even though the individual evaluations may, or there may be evaluations of individual activities, there ought to be some summarization of that. Certainly there's levels of participation that one can look at, although again that's weak data, but it is data. There are any kind of indicators that you can have that the program was effective in any particular regards. So okay. It's a broad-based idea, looking at the entire program. Now, personally, and I probably get in trouble for saying this, but personally, if I take that perspective on program evaluation, I see it in a sense as somewhat less important than the individual activities, individual accountability activities. My preference would be to view program evaluation as a global or a summary view of the individual accountability activities. The problem I have with program evaluation for school counseling programs is that so much of what we do as school counselors is of relatively short duration. If I have a program where people are supposed to change in some regard between September and June, and there's something going on the whole time, then I just look at the September and June data. But school counseling interventions don't run like that.
Right.
They're short term, so right. forth and so on. So it's very, very difficult to look at overall program evaluation other than in how many people participated, what services were provided, those kinds of things. That's good stuff, but it's not particularly powerful.
Well, it sounds too like at a larger school, program evaluation might be different in that you're looking at what a number of school counselors do as a guidance group as opposed to an individual school counselor and interventions.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. The last question, which is a bit negative, but hopefully your answer will be positive, is how should a school counselor deal with his or her own resistance? Not that all school counselors are going to be resistant, but sometimes even though we know we should do something, we may feel a barrier to doing that.
Well, I think there's lots of things in life that we don't want to do.
Yes, and, certainly.
Certainly a lot of that going on. My basic idea to that is, it's kind of like how to eat an elephant.
Yes.
One step at a time. And you just take a bite and you start. And I think being accountable is the same kind of thing. You just start. You just pick a place. Again, you pick something that's in the comfort zone, so forth and so on. If done correctly, it is self-reinforcing behavior. And so if one is successful at being accountable, even if the results of a particular activity aren't as positive as we like them, but if the overall accountability effort is successful, meaning that some kind of data were gathered, they were presented, et cetera, then that in itself is rewarding. Okay? There's very, very few things in the school counseling profession, or indeed in the counseling profession in general, where we can say, I was the direct cause of that.
There's so many variables.
A lot of what we do is based on faith. And so kids pass through our lives, and we think we helped them, but we don't really know, and so forth. And if we're real lucky, after they've gone through college and everything, they'll come back and say, you really helped me. But that's a long way down the road, and it's relatively rare even at that. And I would submit that there are things that we can do now that are more immediate, that will show that we are making an impact, and or that we should change our behavior and make it another way. And that in itself is reinforcing. That in itself lets us know how we're doing.
Okay, so take a risk.
Oh, yeah.
Get your feet wet and see how it feels. Okay, well, great. Well, again, the book is called The Accountable School Counselor by Larry C. Lesh and Martin H. Ritchie. And I thank you so much, Larry, for the interview today.
I enjoyed it.
Okay.
You've just heard an interview of Dr. Larry Lesch, as done by CAS contributing editor Dr. Jill Geltner.
Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselaraudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4242. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work. Thank you.